I'm getting mad. I can't accept. Open in. Let me open in. Let me try it.
All right, good morning. I will call us to order for this regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting on this May 5th and ask if everyone would please join the board as we honor America with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Well, thank you and good morning on this damp spring morning. First item on our agenda is public comment number one. This is an opportunity for members of the public to comment on items on today's agenda. Is there anybody wishing to do so? Seeing no one moving to the microphone, we'll move on to consideration of our April 28th minutes.
Move approval.
Second.
Motion and a second. Do we have any additions or corrections? Toot.
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Minutes pass. Consideration of personnel actions.
Move approval.
Second.
Motion and a second. Toot?
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Personnel actions pass. Claims?
Move approval.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Clinton?
Aye.
Toot?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Claims pass. Consent agenda. Board, please add road closures 1533, 1539, 1540, 1541. Is that right that we've got a gap there from 33 to 39? Okay. And add utility permits 1562 and 1563.
Move approval with noted changes.
Second.
Clinton.
Aye.
Toot.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Consent agenda passes. No public hearing items today. That brings us to additional items. Consideration of license quote between Solutions and Treasurer's Office for View Software License. Hi, Barb.
Good morning. Barb Steinbeck, Information Technology.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you.
Renee asked me to speak about this today. I believe it's because it's a contract. So what this is currently, the Treasurer's Office uses the green screen to view the financials through Solutions, which is just like a DOS window when we refer to green screen. And what this is licensing for the View client, which is more Windows in appearance. And the green screen is going away within a year, so this is going to happen ultimately. Right now, it will give them a chance to get used to it before it does go away. And Solutions has offered a substantial discount for them to be able to use this. Now, the auditor already uses this to view the financials. So it's not something that doesn't, you know, it will work with all of our systems. I don't see a problem with getting it installed. And I do have the money in the budget for the maintenance on this because we had anticipated that we would have done this a few years ago and just never did.
I mean, it looks like a no-brainer to me. What would be the rationale for not doing this?
There would not be.
Yeah.
And in a year, we'd be back here again saying, okay, now it's going away and we have to do this.
Questions for Barb?
No.
I'll move approval of the agreement between the View software license for the Treasurer's Office with Solutions Incorporated.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Further discussion? Toot?
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. It passes. Thanks, Barb.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Thanks.
Next item is still Barb, and it's discussion and consideration of a contract between Central Iowa Broadband and Information Technology for new pricing. They went down, right?
This should make you very happy. It's not only a savings, it looks to me like a 75% decrease. I did meet with Larry from Colo Phone Company, which is AKA Central Iowa Broadband, and he indicated that initially when we entered into this contract a year ago, there were a lot of startup costs. Even though they did offer it to us, it was a pretty reasonable rate at that time compared to the Windstream contract we already had in place. But now he's indicated they've recouped some of that expense, and they're getting so much competition, local competition, that they reviewed the contracts again and came to us and were able to offer 75% decrease, which will make that communications line a lot lower on our budget, which should make everybody happy. And what I'd like to point out is he didn't have to do this because it was a five-year contract. He didn't have to do this, so I really give him a lot of credit. Now, I was trying to push my luck. I said, well, okay, then does this make our connection to conservation a little lower too? Because CenturyLink is the competition there. And he said, not yet. So at least we'll decrease this monthly fee for this area in Nevada.
Almost unheard of for government.
It'll be $1,125 per month savings.
Questions?
No, it seemed like a no-brainer there.
Larry's been a great partner. We're so lucky to have a company like that serving our needs with the fiber and the broadband.
So. They've been busy. They've been pretty aggressive.
Yes, they have. And I did mention the agreement that we had with Story Medical and said that we'd be looking for some alternative connections as part two of this project. And his eyes lit up and he said, well, send us the information and we'll just keep it in mind. I said, it's not something we need to do this year or next, but I would like it in my five-year plan. So he's got that under consideration.
Good. I would move approval of the contract between Central Iowa Broadband, Inc. and Information Technology for the new pricing effective 5/1/2015.
Second.
We got a motion and a second. Clinton.
Aye.
Toot.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Government at its finest right there.
Thank you.
Barb, thanks.
Thanks, Barb.
Next is discussion consideration of YSS change in funding request for Rosedale shelter repairs and upgrades. Deb and George, good morning.
Morning.
Well, as you may recall, dollars that had been budgeted for the Toledo Juvenile Home, which closed a little over a year ago, had been requested by YSS to be used for repairs and upgrades at the Rosedale shelter in Ames. The board had approved that request, and we had a list of items that YSS had proposed would be included in those repairs and those upgrades. And George has submitted a request instead of using $4,000 to replace living room and entryway flooring, because they have another source of funding for that, he would like to request that this be considered to use to purchase new furniture at Rosedale. And I had included a picture in your packet as far as what that furniture looks like. It's designed to withstand the type of use that it will be used for at the shelter, being more durable. And we think that this is a good use of those funds. And just so you know, to date, the amount of dollars drawn down for the repairs is $4,922. That's what we've paid out. So we still expect there to be claims submitted through the end of the fiscal year for the rest of the repairs that are in progress and need to be completed, and that would include the furniture if that's approved.
And George, I just ask you, so it looks to me like we've got several areas, and the one that jumps out at me is replace exterior doors.
Yes.
Where we have no action. We got the money in the budget this year to get it done. It gets a little problematic for us to extend it out. Not that it's undoable, but it just gets a little harder.
Right.
Are we in a situation where that's going to be able to get done and billed to the county by July 1st?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, everything's been ordered that you see here, and it's just a matter of us processing the billings when we get them.
Okay. And I see that the total is $57,000, and we've allocated $60,000. Is that our reserve, our expected overrun? What's happening with that other three?
Yes. The $30,000 of that is county funds.
Okay.
We did, as you know, have a greater need than the county could fill. And, again, thank you for transferring that $30,000 from the Toledo Juvenile Home to the Rosedale Shelter. We did get a grant from Perry Meadows that we added to it, and we did get a grant from the Community Foundation, so your money helped trigger
good
others in the community. And then also, you may know, with my retirement, we are raising money for the Dr. George Legacy Fund, and so the rest of that will be made up through the legacy fund.
Yep.
So we'll meet the figure.
I just want some maybe clarification from either you or Deb on your description here. The couple things when you talk about maintenance, he says replace living room and entryway flooring, and the other exterior memorial fountain landscape changes of and when I look at all the other items, you know, under safety, it's very clear that I could justify that those, you know, could have direct implications for safety of clients and et cetera. I'm not quite sure how the flooring and the memorial fountain amount that is in here fits in the same category as what we had originally talked about when we allocated those dollars to Roseville Shelter. So if you could just comment a little bit on that, please.
Well, for one thing, the those two items are being covered by the other grants,
okay,
not the Story County funding. And the main thing with the fountain, and
okay,
I hate to admit it, is that when we put the fountain in, and we put it was the Filiberry fountain after his death. He was a longtime YSS board member and supporter, and he left a memorial fund. His friends contributed to it, and we put in that fenced-in area right next to the shelter. We went with a landscaping model that had a lot of stones and rocks, as if it was a stream, and we didn't think about the fact that kids could pick up those rocks and
okay,
they could throw them. So it is a safety issue. So actually what we're doing there is we're cementing the rocks in so that they're not loose. It really is a safety
okay
issue.
And okay,
and the same with the flooring. It's so bad, people can trip over it.
I think there are some sanitary issues, too.
Yes,
with the
yes. Okay. Yes. Mm-hmm. And may I add that this shelter, again, was the first emergency use shelter in Iowa. 50 years before we opened Iowa's first shelter here in Story County, we opened Iowa's first animal shelter. It took 50 years later before we had shelters for runaway and abused kids, as we do for animals. It's been really tough getting the expenses met for the shelter, but you funded it. You were our first funder for the shelter, the Story County Board of Supervisors, and you've always supported us very generously. That building has seen 7,800 kids. It is worn down.
Mm-hmm.
As you can see, we're replacing every door. Every lock, it's just too old. In our strategic plan 2017-18, we will be building a new shelter. It will be built to meet the needs. What we have now is an old home that we have added on to, and it's in a great location and everything, but it's really worn down.
Mm-hmm.
We'll move that facility into transitional living, which is long term, and people will make that place their home, young people. And we are, next year will be our 40th anniversary. We'll be launching a capital campaign of $3 million to build a new shelter somewhere in Story County. It may not even be in Ames. We haven't looked yet where it's going to be. But as you know, more and more, as time has passed and we got state funds and DHS funds, and then they cut back the numbers of shelters. Here in central Iowa, three shelters closed 3 years ago. There are only two shelters left in central Iowa. So we're pretty full all the time, and the kids are much more difficult to manage because it's really the high-end need kids that are getting care. The others are not. And I regret that, but that's the way it is right now. And we need to have a shelter that better fits the needs of the kids we're getting now. So this is all going to be put to good use while we get ready to build a new facility. So I thank you for the support. It really has made a difference.
Absolutely. And I'll give my view, and then we can have further conversations to see where we're going this. My view is pretty simple. We recognize the need, exactly what George was just talking about, that shelter has really, really served Story County well. It has been through some hard use over the last 30 plus years. And I believe that when we committed this $30,000, it was in order to bring it, update it in a safe, long-term kind of way. I think getting quality furniture that is going to be safe and reliable is part of that. I think that there ought to be flexibility for YSS to utilize those $30,000 as long as it applies to the safety and the updating of that building, to use it as they see fit. And I think it's phenomenal that they were able to leverage that 30 into paying the rest of it. If somebody else wants to come in and pay for the flooring, then in my mind, that doesn't make that $4,000 goes away. It just means that we get to utilize that somewhere else. In this case, they're suggesting the furniture. I really do want to see all this get done by July 1st so that we can have it all paid for by then. But I think it's an appropriate request. I think it's well in line with our intent when we initially approved this. And so I'm inclined personally to be supportive of this.
Well, the bottom line at the end of the day, what the most important thing for me here is that this is obviously outstanding disclosure of the intent and the desire to do things. And, you know, by coming back and asking, you know, for these changes, knowing that funds have been allocated towards this, I think, again, shows the level of stewardship and the manner in which George has always conducted in communicating with the board. And I definitely appreciate having, you know, something like this and that it's gone through this process that we can kind of take a look at, ask some questions, get clarifications if we need it. And that way, I think if we, you know, hear concerns or questions from others, I think it's been well vetted. So I want to thank you for that. You know, I can be supportive of that.
I'll move approval of the change in funding request for Rosedale for the $4,000 to be used for furniture.
Second.
Motion and second. Before we vote, Deb, are we missing anything? Is there any caution that you would give the board before we? Okay. Anything else? Toot?
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. It passes. Thank you, George.
Thank you very much. And thank you, Deb.
Next item is consideration of site development plan for zoning permit application 8300. Commercial industrial zoning permit for construction of an office building addition at 18327 720th Avenue in Zeering. Hi, Charlie.
Rather simple project in front of you. However, since it's a commercial and industrial zoning permit, it is required to get the site plan is required to get Board of Supervisors approval. This is the wind energy facility for NextEra's Energy's wind farm up there in the northeast corner. I believe this is just an extension, a 550 square foot addition to their office center up there. I believe the board's been up in that building where they have all their computers and everything, and I believe they're just adding on to that room. So we reviewed it from a staff standpoint. Everything looks good, and we just asked for the board to give approval to the site plan, and we'll move forward with issuing the permits.
Yeah. Questions for Charlie?
It's pretty straightforward.
Pretty strong. Move approval of the site development plan for application 8300 as submitted.
Second.
Motion and a second. Further discussion. Clinton.
Aye.
Toot.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Passes. Thanks, Charlie. Agency reports. Emergency residence project. Vic Moss. Vic.
Hey.
Vic, how are you today? I'm glad.
Are you sure?
It's early.
Thank you, sir.
Okay. All right. I'm sure I won't. I can get it. Well, I'll get it. I'll give it to her. I need to get up and move.
What I just passed out was our annual report. That is our latest complete fiscal year report. I have a few bits of data. We have an ongoing report for the current year, but I think that gives a pretty good picture of what we have done. Last year, we assisted 2,102 people. for the fiscal year. We provided shelter for an average of 61 people a night, which was our busiest year ever.
But what was it in previous years? Do you remember off the top of your head about?
In the 50s, the previous year to that, you go way, way back to the beginning, it was three people in 1987, the year I started. So anyway, we've been going up considerably.
And have we seen a consistent growth, or has it, when it got into the 50s, was it up and down a little bit?
Well, the current number is 50 to 60, really reflects our capacity, not the need.
Okay.
I wish I could say that that was not true, but if we had more beds, we would keep them full too. The need has never leveled off. What did happen though was within a few years, I saw a change in the population. It used to be that we were considered mainly a transient shelter. The first year I was there, we had just about 200 people, and I think 180 something of those were single men. I, in fact, remember the first year there were 15 families for the year, so about once every 3 weeks. And the numbers kept going up for the number of single men for transients, but then they leveled off after a few years. The number of families never leveled off. And right now, if we were to start over again, we would probably build a family shelter and maybe have a wing for men, but that's not how we were able to design the building. I think we're doing as much as we can with our present capacity. Now, the city has part of their long-term plan with involving their community development block grant to increase the supply of emergency shelter. How that's going to happen is a big question right now because we're kind of landlocked. So we gave up part of our property last year to a fellow agency called Story County Community Housing so they could build a fourplex. And we really, with meeting the zoning restrictions right now, we'd have to pave every bit of grass in order to add more bedrooms to what we have already. So, and we don't want to do that because we have the only playground in the neighborhood. The surrounding buildings are nothing but an acre of concrete behind the buildings because the parking requirements. We provided short-term shelter, which is what we started at, for 731 people. Now, those 731 people, we had to squeeze into 21 beds. And you can see that the problem already is that we have to keep turnovers and get new people in because we get so many people a month, and law enforcement is still our biggest source of referrals. When we get those calls in the middle of the night, which they tend to happen, we'll sometimes have to do some shuffling even then, carrying in camp costs into our living room and stuff like that to squeeze people in, but we really are at our capacity. And we have to turn people away, which I thought for years we would never have to turn anybody away, but I was assuming that the need would level off at some point, but it never did. What we started doing was leasing motel rooms for overflow, and right now we have two on a permanent basis and a couple more that we get on a intermittent basis. And the reason for that is this gasohol plant that's going up here between here and Ames. They're about a year behind schedule because they can't find housing for a sufficient number of workers. We sometimes get pipe fitters at our shelter and others. But they're taking all the motel rooms that are available, so we can't even buy a room some nights, and that's really our predicament. We occasionally will go with one of the higher-priced motels, but you're talking $70, $80, $90 a night, especially on the weekend. The prices really spike, and So we're doing what we can with our current funding, but we really do need to expand what we're doing. We have three programs. We have emergency shelter, which I just mentioned. We have transitional housing, which we have six apartments for families, and those are undergoing some changes. I thought it was interesting when George mentioned having to redo some of what they're doing. We're doing the same thing. We built our building 15 years ago. Right now we're doing a complete redo of the apartments, taking out everything, even the plumbing fixtures, the cabinets and everything. We discovered that you really have to get the best quality available, and right now we're replacing everything with Prison Industries, cabinetry and stuff like that. And I know our towel bars, according to the person who installed them, he said they could hold 500 pounds. We really have to make stuff pretty indestructible when you're dealing with large families. With in many cases, the children have had a rough childhood until they get there, and some of the problems continue. So
We're replacing all our doors and putting in less high maintenance flooring and things like that. But we're doing all that with donations, so that won't involve our request from the county. We hope to be done with half of it by the beginning of this next fiscal year. If you have any questions, I guess I've already told you that there's a huge problem that we're trying to deal with. What we've been seeing is a huge squeeze, a demographic squeeze, you might say, in the middle class, in which we're seeing more people that can't afford better housing than ever and more that can't afford anything at all. And we're dealing with that bottom 40%, you might say, that are simply being squeezed out of housing. If you just look back at what has happened, I'm sure within your memories in the last few years, we lost the largest trailer court in Story County was in Huxley. Lost most of that. We lost the one on North Dakota Avenue. We lost one between the West Hy-Vee and the Ames campus. We lost on Lincoln Swing. Lost another trailer court. We lost Emerald Court on South Ames. We lost two by the old Ames Drive-In to go way back. We've lost most of our lowest priced housing. This was the housing that we were able to help families get into once they left our shelter. Right now, they're probably not going to get to live in Ames once they leave our care. And so, we can't really affect the market economy because it's really based upon what people can afford. I know one example, my assistant's nephew last year had saw his rent go up $210 a month. And that's simply because that's what the market will allow. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, we haven't seen wages go up for that lower echelon of people. I did some figures just recently looking at the typical person that comes into our shelter. Making minimum wage is grossing $1,200 a month. And by the time their take home is going to be closer to $1,000. If they're trying to rent an apartment in Ames, they're going to be paying probably about $650 to $700 for rent, and another, depending upon what's included, another $40, $50, $60 in utilities. They're going to be paying about 80% of their take home wages for housing. Now, economists and others will tell you that 30% is a standard rule that you should pay for housing. In fact, you can't get a mortgage loan if you're insurance and mortgage and taxes are going to go over that. Credit counselors tell you not to pay more than that. So we're dealing with people that we can no longer give simple advice to about turning down the heat, turning down the temperature in your water heater and things to save. Right now we can't get people over that bar with housing the way we used to. So that's kind of the continuing problem that I'm hoping that something will happen in the next year or two. The city has, for the first time, has decided this really is an economic problem. The last project we had, which was a poverty simulation, the Chamber of Commerce was one of the main partners in this. In fact, it was a project of Leadership Ames, which they sponsor. And so they're realizing that it's in the best interest of the entire community to have places that workers can live if they're going to have a growing economy here. So I'm hoping that we're reaching that critical mass or that degree of awareness where we'll do something to really change. I am working with a group called AMOS, which I'm sure you've heard about. They are a community action agency. And we're sponsoring a meeting this fall in which we're hoping to have all the leaders. You'll certainly be invited to this to try to look at what we can do about housing. We've identified a few places we consider having best practices, one in Portland, Oregon, and another one in Connecticut, and actually New Mexico has a place that we're hoping that some things can be done. Now, everything that needs to be done is not going to be easy. It's probably going to be controversial, and it's really we're going to have to decide, you know, what we're willing to do if we really want to make sure that everybody that works here can afford to live here. And so I'm sure you'll be hearing more about this, but I hope I'm not getting too far off of what you wanted to hear this morning. Any questions?
Well, just a comment, Vic. First of all, I was really learned a great deal by participating in the poverty simulation event that you just mentioned, and I was just going to throw out a comment to you. You know, going through that experience, I was one of those lucky individuals that had a job. But my house, my take-home income was such that we couldn't afford to pay the rent the first time around. And it finally, the only way we were able to pay the rent was because of a disability check. My father-in-law actually was living in with us, and he had a disability check coming in. And so we had to use his disability check to be able to make sure that we could pay our rent. But as I saw some of the other people, you know, ended up being put out of their home for failure to be able to make ends meet. And so I think it in itself was really an eye-opener and a great experience for those that participated. But I was going to tell you that I've always thought of you as a really easygoing, mild-mannered, very meek person. But the role that you played that day wasn't being quite as understanding and as meek as you would normally be. You guys were making it real difficult for those of us that needed to come for assistance and so forth. And oftentimes that assistance was very minimal, but it was helpful. So my takeaway from that is that I hope that the next round we could get more of the business community, some of the developers involved. We had a great support from the City of Ames and the leadership and the Leadership Ames group, and I think the provider agencies that participated, it was really an eye-opening experience. And I know I had a conversation with a couple of my colleagues afterwards, and we talked about just the concept of the minimum wage. And I know that's a very difficult issue for a lot of people to deal with, and we always come back with saying, well, education is the key for the future, if they, that they will be able to get better jobs. But my problem with that is what do we do for the people right now who's already trapped in that situation that don't have the educational means, and it would be difficult for them to even go back to school and try to gain some more experience and still try to meet their daily needs based on the minimum wage. So it's an argument that, you know, we're not going to necessarily get 100% agreement on, but it's something that I think really needs to be talked about and dealt with. And I found out was just recently McDonald's, I think, went up to almost $9.25 or something for their employees. Good step. But again, this is going to be an ongoing discussion. I'm sure with the presidential race coming up, we're going to hear a lot more talking about candidates, some for, some against. But I do think that as a community, we still need to have the dialogue, whether we agree or disagree, as to what are the parameters to make life more affordable for those who are already at the bottom and have limited opportunities to for upward mobility. And I want to again thank you for all that you do at the shelter for the segment of population that need that service. So it's we're very fortunate in Ames to have people like yourself. So thank you.
Yeah, you have to have a shelter. Ames is a place to have it because of the support that we've had. You know, I really appreciate all that. And I just hope that we can make people realize that the world has changed so incrementally that we don't always realize that when you look back and do studies, you see that it really is significantly different. Most people living in poverty now are working.
Yes.
And unfortunately, yes, a living wage for a single person is about $14 an hour.
Right.
You're talking about a minimum wage that is half of that. You can see there's a huge gap there that it's hard to fill, but we need to figure out ways to at least try to fill that gap.
Thank you.
Before we go, I just want to make sure I've got the takeaways from your report to us today, and really appreciate the report, really appreciate what you do for the community and for those who are struggling with housing situations. But my takeaways are you're beyond capacity right now. The current shelter that you have was designed primarily for the single males. And in fact, if you were just dealing with single males, you would be fine there. What you're really missing in the capacity side is something that's set up more for families. And it's something that we need to address as a community. Then moving beyond that, getting to the root of the problem, why you're beyond capacity, clearly we've got to deal with the affordable housing issue. I just encourage everybody to keep in mind that I believe this is bigger than just a names issue. I believe that it also becomes a transportation issue when you start looking at the availability of affordable housing in some of the smaller communities around Ames and just identifying how we're going to make sure those people can get to work appointments, shopping, everything that they'd have to do in Ames. But we need to, the realities of a market-driven economy say that this is a tough solution within Ames to get to affordable housing. It's not as tough a solution if you can expand that circle, but that means we better have a more substantial transportation system here in Story County in order to deal with that. I want to make sure that my takeaways from what you were talking about today are close to on mark.
Yep. No, that's exactly what I was hoping you'd see. I think that people should understand that this is part of a much larger problem. We have a little window on it. It's a nationwide problem. One group that's called the National Low-Income Housing Coalition does studies every year, and what they have shown that nationwide about 40% of renters can't afford the housing they're in using that 30% rule. And so in Ames it's a little higher because the university population does affect it, but it's not a lot more than you would expect in any community of this size. So, again, we can just try to deal with our little piece of the problem. Thank you.
Thank you, Vic.
Thank you. Thank you.
Next item is Mid-Iowa Community Action Reporting.
Okay.
Always love it when Micah comes. Good morning.
Good morning. We're here with our entourage. I'm Arlene McAtee. I'm the Executive Director of Mid-Iowa Community Action. And with me this morning are Sunny Thompson, who's our Story County Family Development Director, Gloria Simons, who's our Health Services Director, and Dr. Fontaine Walker, who's our Story County Dental Clinic Director. I am going to speak very, very briefly because these folks have the local story to share with you.
Okay.
The couple of things I want to say is I can certainly affirm what Vic was just talking about. Unfortunately, when we look at MICA, the entire agency, we had a fairly stable year last year regarding funding and staffing, and that allowed us to serve 25,905 individuals in our service area. And what we know about those individuals is 67% of the families had income from employment. So that, you know, I've been around since, forever, and we're celebrating our 50th year. They got by about 14 years without me, and I've been there since. So when I first came, the majority of the people we served were senior citizens on fixed incomes and other people who might be receiving, say, welfare assistance, the traditional welfare assistance. So what I've watched change over the last three decades is we're serving the working poor. And we still have seniors, and 8% of the people we serve are still people who receive traditional welfare assistance, but only 8%. Additionally, though, of those folks we're serving, over two-thirds are at 100% of the poverty level or below. So remember, two-thirds are working, but two-thirds of them are making, well, for a family of four, less than $23,000 a year. So the crisis that Vic talked about is just reinforced by our data, sort of second verse, same as the first. One other thing that I wanted to talk about is that MICA is now in the midst of its new strategic plan. It's an outcome-based, results-oriented plan. Every department in the organization, from those that provide service to those who provide administration, have outcomes that they're working on. And we discussed that a little bit last year in our report when I presented the community needs assessment. We talked about the direction we were moving. And one last thing that I wanted to discuss is we're moving our Nevada Head Start classroom yet again. Last year we moved it. And we were lucky that we had a place. I think it's Little Cubs Daycare that they just started up and we were able to go in there, but they're expanding. And luckily, after another extensive search, we'll be going in back with the school district in Nevada into their resource center.
Okay.
So that's a great place for us to be. Right. We're really looking forward to that location, and we hope that we'll be able to stay there for a longer period of time than our last move. So those are the basic things I wanted to talk about. We'll have Sunny talk for a couple of minutes about what's going on in family development in Story County, and then Gloria and Fontaine will talk about health services.
All righty. Well, you guys should have received it, the report from Family Development Services via email. Our food pantry numbers are staying steady. Still consistently seeing 200 to 300 families each month. We did start tracking this year the new families that are coming in. instead of just repeat families, and that number has held steady at 20 to 30 families each month that have not utilized our services before. With our family development programs, our Steps to Success program is going strong. We have a new case manager. Our previous case manager did leave that position, but we have a new case manager that is meeting the needs of the community there and providing the home visits. We just wrapped up our energy assistance program, the final numbers with that. For Story County, we're 1,075 families served for the LIHEAP program. And I guess that's about it. Any questions?
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm. You should have received ahead of time two newsletters, one that outlines the health services, and you will see the WIC numbers for March on the one that's pink. I don't know if it's pink in your copy. And you will look down to Ames and Nevada, and you can see we serve about 1,300 participants a month, and that's about average. Now, in WIC, when you look at the impact on families, first of all, it's a healthy food choices. There's education on nutrition and diet and activities. And they estimate that it's a savings of about $500 a year for a participant in WIC. We have some new staff. We have Amy Roback, who has been our first five coordinator, is now our maternal and child health coordinator. And our maternal and child health clinics are co-located with our WIC clinics, so the families that are seen in WIC are provided the opportunity to participate in maternal and child health. In maternal health, they get to have dental screenings and fluoride treatments, and they get to work with an RN on many things, depression screening, abuse screenings, domestic violence screenings, and risk assessments, and an opportunity to talk to an RN about the pregnancy process, delivery, and any of their concerns about parenting. Where in a doctor's office you get your 10 minutes, 15 if you're lucky. Our time with our nurse is not limited, so we are patient-centered, so they are able to direct the conversation to their areas of most concern. Now we'll get to the dental portion. As you may know, Iowa Health and Wellness started their dental wellness program. We have a new grant working with Delta Dental in doing outreach, helping participants in Iowa Health and Wellness understand that they have a dental component. Out of all the 100, I think there's 120,000 Iowa Health and Wellness participants, only 30,000 are on, are taking advantage of the dental program. So we're out providing some outreach, contacting participants and letting them know what services are available and how the tiered dental program, because it is a tiered program based on healthy behaviors. So we're doing those outreach and reminding people that they have dental appointments. We do our school sealant program, and you can see on the pink sheet that we've done a lot of sealants this year, and we do some schools in Ames that qualify. You have to be 40% of the free and reduced lunch rate. You have the first five newsletter, and if you would look in the back of that, it indicates the providers that are participating in first five, and you look at Story County, and that's quite a list. It's a wonderful program where primary care physicians hook up families with children with delays or stress to someone that can help connect them to other resources and do care coordination, which is wonderful. Yeah. I will introduce Dr. Fontaine Walker. That is the biggest change to the Story County Dental Clinic. Dr. Walker joined the staff officially June 2nd of last year. When we were without a dentist in March, Dr. Walker helped substitute and fill in, and it's been wonderful to have him. we hear from many patients about what wonderful service they receive. So we're very lucky to have Fontaine. We keep a no-show rate of below 20%, which is astounding and wonderful. No-shows are particularly impactful with the Story County Dental Clinic because we only charge Medicaid rates. Dental Wellness pays a little bit more, but it's still below the cost of care. When the January 1st, when Iowa Health and Wellness started, everybody thought they had dental coverage, and the phone rang off the hook. The dental coverage really didn't start till May. We were able, between January and May, do urgent care, but now we're able to do screenings and urgent care and quality of life until people move to the second tier, and the first people that were able to do that were in May, right? In May. Mm-hmm. So,
do we have a process, the 20% no-show rate, knowing that you're only able to charge for the ones that show up and frankly need to show up? What do we do to try to encourage and notify and make sure they're aware that the appointment's coming?
I'll call ahead. We do a reminder calls.
Okay.
And they're known, they're notified 48 hours in advance, and they're reminded that they need to come or give us 24-hour notice. If it's an emergency, of course we don't count that, but if they miss two appointments, they need to find dental care somewhere else.
Okay, thank you.
Do you hear transportation as an issue for some of them as the reason why they can't be there? Do they mention that?
I think sometimes that might be a problem. But they may, in that if you were self-pay and your cost for that day is going to be $80 and you need a new tire, well.
Right.
But you would know more, Dr. Walker.
About the no-shows, I mean, you have the transportation problem with personal vehicles, but Ames, they have the herder service. They have a lot available to,
for the Ames residents. But we do see people from across the state. Over 60% are from Story County. 28% are children. We see people. Well, obviously, the 40% are from other counties. And so
And even when you have failures, I mean, it's such a need for this population that we feel it a lot of times, people calling in, on an emergency basis. So,
yeah, I imagine you don't have a whole lot of downtime.
Correct. So I came from the clinic and I'm going back to the clinic. So it's always stuff to do, even with the 20% failure rate.
Well, we appreciate you being here today and taking some time out, although we want you at the clinic as much as possible. The work you're doing is so important. Thank you.
Right.
Questions?
My question, I have a backlog of dental floss and little things from all the years that I go to my checkup. Can you donate stuff like that to the clinic that can be used?
Yeah, yes, you may.
Okay, that's good to know, because my wife is just getting on me. She said, don't bring any more of this stuff here, because I've got a whole bag of stuff. Okay.
So at the end of the day, I mean, with the low reimbursement, I mean, it's a business model that private dentists can't afford. It's not that they don't want to accept Title 19, people without insurance. It's just you can't pay your staff, can't, take care of your families with what they pay.
Right.
So Micah found a way to make it happen, and I had not seen it. I mean, I'm in private practice myself, so it just was a great opportunity to serve the population that I come up in, that I'm from. So, and it's the only place in the state, I believe. I was affiliated with community health care in Davenport in the Quad Cities, but that's a federal, but this is the only operation that's non-private. No.
Well, it's a necessary service. We're lucky that Micah runs it like they do. We're really lucky that you decided to give back to the community that, as you say, you came up in. Thank you so much.
This is the only place that I know that I can do it. So, appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Without your support.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Next, YSS, Dr. George. I like those tennis shoes, Dr. George.
Oh, thank
talk in touch.
Is this our last one with you?
July.
Oh, we'll get you in July. Okay, good.
I will be back in July with and to introduce you to the new CEO of YSS. I will not be the CEO of YSS when I'm here in July, but I'll be working with the new CEO part-time for orientation training to help him get his feet on the ground. I do want to make sure that you have his resume and background, so I brought some copies of my CEO greeting. The gentleman's name is Andrew Allen. 20 years ago today, he was a client in our program. And now he's going to be the CEO of YSS. It's really quite an incredible story of turning adversity into payback. And he is from Nevada. His entire life he's lived in Story County. In fact, his roots go so far back in Story County. His great-great-great-grandparents were the first couple to occupy the farmhouse when Iowa State was founded.
Hmm.
We have a family that ran the furniture store here in Nevada for many years, hit some hard times, and he was abusing drugs and alcohol as a very young man, got involved with the court, juvenile court, was on probation. He had as many offenses, if he had been an adult, to spend 20 years in prison. OWI is what finally brought him to YSS, and he had been expelled from the Veda High School, so he wasn't even in school. Completely turned his life around, has been recovering for the past 20 years, has served on our board, did finish Nevada High, married his girlfriend from Nevada, have three children. They live in Huxley now. Andrew is someone who has been paying back, contributing not only to YSS, but many other nonprofits. He did graduate from Iowa State. Last 14 years, he's been at the Principal Financial Group. And he worked his way up. He was in charge of public relations and philanthropy. In fact, we were applying for grants from him. It's a big change for him leaving the corporate world and coming to the nonprofit world, but he's very well prepared for it. He's going to have a steep learning curve, and especially on child welfare and funding and all of that, but he is up to it. He's a great leader. He'll be a great fundraiser. And one thing for sure, he loves YSS, and he loves working with kids. He's been working as a mentor with kids the last 20 years. He's an incredible person. Our board made the announcement last week, and I do want to thank Wayne for being part of the interview process, representing the Board of Supervisors. Mm-hmm. Deb also was one of our outside stakeholders. I had no role whatsoever in the hiring of our new CEO. It was strictly a board and community decision. And that's the way it should be. They did a national search. They had over 40 applicants, narrowed it down to 20, then to 8, then the 3, and those are the 3 that Deb, Wayne, Juvenile Court, and other outside stakeholders were asked to interview and give us feedback. And then we had a town hall meeting for anyone at YSS. There were over 100 people there to view and get to interview and hear our finalist. And they took a week and a half to look through all that feedback and decided to make the offer. So he will start July 1, and if you would, hand those to the supervisors for me.
But it sounds to me, George, like Andrew has an unbelievably good resume and background to assume a position like this, albeit with a steep learning curve, before you add in his involvement and the impact that YSS had on his life. And I think when you take his background and his experiences and add to that the reality that, at least in some sense, YSS has a direct link to what he's done with his life, I think it becomes an absolute slam dunk, grand slam, any sports metaphor you want for YSS.
I'm thrilled with their decision. I think he'll be a great director. He will never give up on a kid. I know that. Because we didn't give up on him.
Exactly. Well, you didn't give up on him.
Right. Well, I would have to say, George, it was the most difficult decision I had because early on in the process, we were asked not to divulge who the finalist was. And when I would come back, they knew that I was at the meeting and there, but I never...
You did a great
job. I never mentioned exactly who the three finalists were. I kind of gave a little preview as to the quality of the candidates, but that was tough. So I want you to know, for those listening, I can still be trusted with secrets. It might cost people a little bit, but I can still be trusted.
Thank you. Two of the three finalists had not told their employers yet.
Yes.
So they wanted to keep it confidential.
Wayne and Deb did a great job not sharing with Paul. Now, I tried to get information out of him, and he wouldn't give me any. I do have one issue, though, George. So we're thanking the search committee. There's one person in this search committee picture all the way in the back who is completely inappropriately dressed, and we need to make sure that we take care of that. He's wearing an Iowa Hawkeye shirt.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's from Marshalltown. We had one representative from each of our community-based centers, Des Moines, Marshalltown, Boone, Webster City, and Nevada. Mm-hmm. And so he's a Hawkeye, unfortunately.
He can pretend when he's visiting us. He can pretend.
Before I say another word, I want to thank the Board of Supervisors for the recognition you gave me 2 weeks ago. It was a total shock. I had no idea that is why I was summoned before you. I thought it was to discuss funding. So that was just a really big surprise, and I just can't thank you enough for the recognition.
Well, it's not enough. I mean, we didn't do enough, but we did what we could do. We are so appreciative of what you've done. And we've said it before, and I'm going to make sure we say it again at least a couple times. Ames and Story County is a better place because you've been in it.
Right.
And your successor has huge shoes to fill. It sounds like he's going to do a great job, but we are so fortunate that you have done what you've done here. And there's no way we can ever recognize that enough.
I thank you very much. It's very, very kind of you. And next year when you think about that award again, may I nominate Vic Moss. My gosh, there's a true saint who has done more than anyone I can think to be of service to this community, to this county. He's an incredible human being. But I know you have a lot of others that you will consider, but Vic is truly made a contribution. Really quick, we will just give you, because it is my last time speaking to you as CEO, if you'd just give me a minute, I'd like to reminisce about how this all got started. Mentioned before when Deb and I were up here, we opened the first emergency youth shelter in Iowa. And when we opened, there was no such thing as a shelter license. There was no funding. And we were really an alternative to jail because that's where kids went. Here in the Story County Administration Building, it was the courthouse, and you had the jail up here. And there was a pink jail for boys and a blue jail for girls. And they were right in the same line with the adults. They could hear each other. Down at where our headquarters is now, the city hall, there was a jail for kids down there, too. They were separate from the adults. There was no window in those rooms. It was really pretty bad conditions. So when we opened the shelter, it was really an alternative to jail for runaways, because at that time, runaways who were picked up could be placed in jail. There weren't even detention centers. There was Meyer Hall. That was the only real detention center in the state. So what happened, we were hanging by a thread as far as funding. It was all donations. Milt Sizer, who was the district judge, ordered the Board of Supervisors to fund the shelter for $5,000. He actually wrote a court order and put it in the juvenile court budget. That's how our funding got started. You were the first funders, and I started coming back then. This is before YSS was founded 39 years ago, and have worked with every Board of Supervisors since the early 70s. And no matter whether it's been a Republican, Democratic, or mixed board, we have always received great support. As we spread our work to other communities, we would go to the Board of Supervisors for funding. We get direct funding from the Marshall County Board of Supervisors, from Polk County Board of Supervisors, from the Hamilton County Board of Supervisors, from the Boone County Board of Supervisors. Those are towns where we have physical facilities. And our funding from you has grown over the years. When Asset evolved, at that time, your funding for YSS was in the juvenile court budget. Now, a lot of people don't remember this, but at one time, the juvenile court officers, they were called probation officers, they were county employees. So that whole thing was county money. It was later that they became state employees, but they still had a budget that you contributed to. So when Asset was formed, they didn't want to move that money from juvenile court, because at that time it was really part of the juvenile court budget, which it has remained all this time. I know that there is some consideration being given by juvenile court, Shirley Faircloth, to maybe moving that money out of the juvenile court budget, but this will be my last chance to make a plea. I hope that you will maintain that funding in the juvenile court budget for two reasons. One, the Board of Supervisors and the juvenile court itself, they have been the ones that have said, this is what we want. I think that has been crucial to molding our services, especially the services that are for the kids outside of Ames, but in Story County, our kids clubs, our mentoring programs here in Nevada, our YSS of Eastern Story County. We're one of the few nonprofits that have a physical facility outside of Ames. And we do a lot of work in the schools, all seven school districts in Story County, particularly big on getting to the schools with our counseling staff. And that is because of that juvenile court budget. So I'd hate to move away from that, because it was all built based on what is going to reduce delinquency, what has been time-tested to reduce delinquency, and I think that has happened in Story County. I think you can be very proud of that. So those are the two reasons I'd really like to keep it there rather than move it. So I know...
Yeah, a couple of things, and George, I'm so appreciative that in your last visit with us as CEO, you would bring that up, because in fact, there is the beginning of a conversation, just what you're talking about, as to whether that funding, not whether that funding would exist or not, but whether it would continue to run through juvenile court or not, and it will be part of our conversation as we lead into budget time next year. The commitment that I want to make to you as we have that conversation, because I think it's an appropriate conversation, even if we end up exactly where we are, to take a look back and then use that to look ahead, is that we're going to want you to be a big part of any conversation that we have, whether you're in the role of CEO or not. You have history that nobody else has. Clearly, you have a passion that nobody else has. And at the end of the day, I don't think you can find anybody involved in the conversation, be it Board of Supervisors, Juvenile Court Services, YSS, Asset, anybody who would be involved in this conversation who would want to do anything to damage YSS, the relationship that YSS has with Greater Story County and all those entities. And so I think we're all starting from the same page. We just need to make sure we go through and have the conversation. And I get your perspective of any kind of change, especially longer term. Short term, it probably wouldn't have any impact. Longer term, it could have an impact. It's a conversation that's worth having, and I want to have it, and this is a good start. But please don't think for a second that this is your only bite at the apple. We're going to want you around a lot as we talk this through. Secondly, going back, you're giving us a little historical perspective, and I enjoy it so much. Talk me through, if you don't mind. I mean, we're in good shape on time today.
My last chance.
I would really like to know. So you came to town to serve the YMCA and specifically work with the youth runaways that were living down in Campustown or hanging out down in Campustown. Talk me through the transition from coming in and doing what you did there to recognizing we have to have a shelter. We've got to have a – clearly you went on to advocate for and ultimately win decriminalizing the act of running away.
Right.
Was there an aha moment where you're down there and you go – We've got to have a place for these kids.
It was already known when I got here. The ISU YMCA is that's where I worked out of. You know, Alumni Hall used to be the Y, right in the center of campus. It's Iowa State's admission department now. And my assignment was, and I was going to graduate school, working on my PhD. It was a perfect match. I was doing my alternative service as well as doing youth work, which is what I always wanted to do. So the opportunities that were handed to me are incredible. And I'm very grateful for them. But there were a lot of runaways in Campustown, and there were a lot of problems, and there was a riot, actually, long before the Visha riots, after a kid had been shot and killed, after breaking in and stealing some money from what was then Archie's shoe store. And police cars were turned over, and there were fires, and the town was very, very anxious. Also, it was just about that time, just before I arrived, the city hall was bombed, and in fact, they were trying to get people out of jail, and a lot of damage was done, and a lot of people were hurt. Every window in that building that is now our headquarters was shattered. It was that powerful. So the town was very tense, and the first aha moment I had is, hey, there's no way we're going to be able to serve all these kids here. We got to get them away from Campustown. So that's when I, within a few weeks, opened the bus stop, which was a drop-in center. I was first drop-in center, and there were three rules: no holding, no using, and no dealing of drugs. And you had to be under 18 to get in. And the kids ran the place. That first year, we had a notebook. You had to write your name every time you came in. We had over 10,000 names. And that's when we realized that we needed a shelter for sure. And so I was opening the shelter at the same time I was running a outreach center, a drop-in center. And
where was the bus stop?
bus stop was in the Lincoln Swing building. A gentleman by the name of Sterling Klink owned it at the time. He owned, and he knew we didn't have any money. He gave me the entire length of that building, the basement. It's a very big space for $70 a month. Yeah, we had no money. We had no money at all until from any government source until the Board of Supervisors. When we would close the bus stop at night, there'd be all these runaway kids with no place to go, hiding out from the police because they didn't want to get picked up and be put in jail. We couldn't find another shelter in the state of Iowa to look at. I took two cars of people, including the one and only probation officer here in Story County. His name was Hap Palmer. And I don't think he's related to the current commissioner of DHS, but we drove to Omaha and we visited a shelter and we came back and decided to open our own shelter. I'm going to turn it over, if I may, to the report from our Community Youth and Family Development Division. Jerry couldn't be here today, but we have certainly a great aide that will cover the whole realm of services.
Hi. Good morning. Thank you for letting us come. My name is Laura Bell. I'm the YSS Abuse and Story County Center Coordinator. So to start us off, our GRIP mentoring program, we had a Nevada mentor come to the mentoring day on the Hill in Des Moines, and she was able to speak with her legislator about the importance of mentoring in her own life. They also held their second annual fundraiser, the Chili Challenge. It was a great event. Three times as many people attended this year as last. And so total as of the end of the quarter, they have served 227 youth, elementary and middle school, in Story County. But the thing is, there's still 54 that are waiting for mentors. So I know particularly here in Nevada, there's a huge need for male mentors. So if there's anybody that's interested, yeah, there's certainly a definite need, because it does really make a difference in a child's life. Kids Club program, they have served Roland Story, 52 children, Gilbert, 91 children, and Ballard has served 59 children. They have also gone through credentialing through DHS for Gilbert and the Roland Story Kids Club sites. They passed with flying colors. The only concerns were there was one recommendation about the amount of surfacing needed at Gilbert Intermediate Playground, and then a recommendation referred to pre-employment physicals and trainings. But Ballard Kids Club and Gilbert Kids Club will be having their licensing visits in May. So right now they're working on their summer curriculums, and so they're going to have a theme of get in the game. So it's going to be lessons that are based on games, so maybe they'll play Operation and then learn about the human body. So it'll be pretty fun. Ballard Teen Club, they have been really working on their service learning project to focus on literacy. So their goals were to create little libraries in the communities in the Ballard School District that didn't have a public library. So the students wrote grants, and they were able to get them funded. So they are putting up free little libraries in Kelly and Cambridge. Also, Collins Maxwell Youth worked on their service project this March. They committed about 88 hours to this project. They had a operations coordinator, Pam Meeker, from Ask Resource Center, talk with them about bullying and what to do if they see someone who is being bullied or know somebody is being bullied. And then as part of that, the students then created their own documentary where they did little short vignettes about their own stories of being bullied. And so then they shared that as part of their celebration process with the service learning. And they talked with the adults who attended about their own experiences, answered questions, and then they also did posters that they created and put those around the schools. With our prevention education programs, we have served for the middle school and high school youth addressing alcohol, tobacco, drug use. It's like 1 to 6 presentations. There was a total of 137 presentations this quarter. With our tobacco, we have been working on really kind of educating people at Quitline, Iowa, also working to get in with the business community, so employers, to help them create tobacco-free and nicotine-free wellness policies, so providing assistance with that. It's kind of been a struggle for us to get into the business community to be able to do that. So if there's any suggestions, I'm all ears on how to do that. We've also been educating the students on our tattoo training. So we went to American Lung Association to be trained in the Teens Against Tobacco Use. So we've been now educating young people to go out and then become peer educators themselves. And so Ballard Game Changers has really taken that on. And they've been doing presentations in the middle school every quarter with their 7th and 8th grade classes. And then we're also working with dental clinics to provide education about Quitline, Iowa, the fax referral program. So dentists can fax refer clients to Quitline, Iowa for services. And if they're Medicaid patients, they can receive a huge benefit with medications and counseling and other things. So it's a great service. And then we're also working with the housing property managers and owners to get an understanding of what they have in place for smoke-free policies. And then if they're interested, we can assist them with developing smoke-free policies for their properties and their grounds. And then they can also be listed on the Iowa Smoke-Free Housing Registry website. So it's a free service through the state, so people who are moving to the area can know that those places have been reviewed and found to be smoke-free if they're looking for that. And I do a lot of presentations at Iowa State, and I had a student last time ask me about, I live in this building and it's not smoke-free. What do I do? And unfortunately, there's just a lack of education that if you go in knowing that there's not a policy in place, there's really very little that the tenant can do. The Talking About Touching program has been working to educate a number of youth. So they have 479 students that they educated this year as of quarter three. Too Good for Drugs, 188. And then our Project Alert programming, which is the substance abuse curriculum in 7th and 8th, well, middle school, I should say, they have educated 446 students. And then our youth development groups, Valid Game Changers, I've said, they've been doing the tattoo trainings, but they also did a throw-chew-week activity where they stated that it was time too few to waste on chew, where they put out table tents and gum for students to kind of promote the National Great American Spit Out Day. Then the Collins Maxwell Champs members created their own Sadie Hawkins Not a Winter Formal dance. So as a way as a drug-free alternative for the students. And then they also did a mock crash that they hosted and created actually this April. So it was an excellent event. They did a great job with it. And then our youth employment program, she's been meeting with a student in Gilbert, working on doing presentations in the schools. She's also been working closely with the Ames and Nevada Summer Learning Programs, so the Summer Enrichment Programs, planning curriculums for education of that program where the students will come and get lunch, but then they also participate in enrichment activities as well. So we'll be doing work with the middle school students in Nevada and in Ames all throughout the summer.
Outstanding.
Thank you.
If I may piggyback on that and just add the Prevention Policy Board, which oversees all of the youth services within the Community Youth Development branch of YSS, just met last night, and they wanted me to let Paul know, I know you're head of the Board of Health, that we're very glad that the Board of Health is now considering banning electronic cigarettes in public place or in the facilities owned and operated by the county, and we hope you will extend that to the parks that the county has. And so thank you for considering that. As you know, we're also working with the city council in Ames on a smoking or a anti-electronic cigarette and anti-tobacco or nicotine expansion of the ordinance that currently is in place. And statewide, the smoke-free public places, we would just add to that electronic cigarettes and those devices. And they have discussed it several times. They consulted their city attorney, had a two-page opinion as to whether they could do this or not, and at the very end said, yes, you can do this. This is legal for you to do. And other communities have done so. So the Prevention Policy Board continues to work on that. Very concerned about the public health issues with electronic cigarettes. As you know, in the last year, the use of electronic cigarettes has gone up threefold from the year before. More kids are now using electronic cigarettes than smoking tobacco in Iowa. That's as a result of the Iowa Youth Survey. Another thing I wanted to add is we had the our prevention branch had for the fourth year now a very unique program called the Teen Maze. And every seventh grader in Story County went through the maze except one school. And then also all the schools in Boone County. And we had 1,200 seventh graders go through the maze. I'm going to ask Laura to pass photos around of the maze. This is the program that the kids get. And then we do follow up with the kids in their schools. It's all prevention-oriented and making life decisions and learning about the consequences of those decisions, especially when you make risky decisions with your health and well-being or the health and well-being of others. Also, we had, and if you look at the back page of this, we have over 50 organizations that participated in the Teen Maze, educating the kids, and also funding the Teen Maze. But most prominent was the are all the Kiwanis clubs in the two-county area participated and volunteered their time. It's a great experience for everyone. And then the other thing was last week at this time, we had our 30th annual Risky Business Conference. Wayne, thank you for coming. I don't know if the others of you got there, but we had 500 in attendance. It was our 30th annual. If you go back to the first one, it was on runaway and missing children. We had John Walsh as our keynote speaker. He was a realtor in Florida who had just lost his son. And that was his first out-of-state speaking engagement. He didn't charge us, just for the flight. And we contacted him and thought 30 years later it'd be good to bring him back, and his fee was $45,000, not including travel. You'd have to pay that on top. But the theme of this year's keynote speaker was bullying and suicide, and the very next day after the conference, on the front page of the Des Moines Register was the information about the death of the 12-year-old girl who had hung herself tragically. And during that conference, we talked to Jay Asher was our keynote speaker, and I'd really highly recommend his book to everyone here who has any concern with bullying and suicide. All the kids have read this book. He was a very popular keynoter. We had his books there sold out. This book is now being made into a movie. It has had a big impact on a lot of kids. The 13 Reasons Why, it's a kid who sound tapes of 13 reasons why she committed suicide and sent that to the 13 people who had bullied her or had in some way harmed her. So we do have, and I'm sorry, that's where I'm headed. We do have a bill at the legislature that our AMP kids have been working really hard for, and it's directly addressing bullying in the schools and on the internet. And the governor's behind it. The first lady was at our conference. She spoke about it. She usually doesn't endorse legislation, but she's worked really hard for it.
There's a hang-up right now on reporting or not reporting to parents.
Right.
Yep.
Where does that stand?
It's deadlocked. And
It's good in the Senate. It's struggling in the House.
Yes. It passed the Senate. And that's the bill that we would support. and the governor supports.
And do you see the rationale there for not requiring the reporting, or is that just part of the bill?
It is if it's in the best interest of the kid to not report. For example, gay and lesbian kids who are not out to their parents, who are being bullied, as this 12-year-old girl was, the school can use their discretion in not telling the parents that your child has been bullied or what the bullying was about. So that's what that issue is boiled down to. And parent rights groups and LGBT groups and everybody has been debating this for 2 years. I leave it with the school, whatever is the best interest of the kid.
Mm-hmm.
So I did want to tell you, too, on our substance abuse and our mental health program, we now have 400 kids in our mental health program who, not talking about the integrated health home program, but who are in our telehealth program. It has just exploded. The telehealth program is psychiatric evaluation, medication management. We have a full-time nurse who works with the psychiatrists who come to us through the video receiver, and they can see the kids and interview them. We're seeing actually a big increase in the number of more affluent kids that are being diagnosed with severe depression. We are seeing a lot more high-risk behavior among those kids. As you know, there was a tragic suicide at Iowa State last week. There have been a number of attempts, and if you look at them recently, most of these have been very accomplished, active in the community, not the types of isolation that we so frequently see, or even bullying. It's we're just seeing kids under a lot of stress with very high expectations, and something goes wrong, and it's like the whole end of the world. And they're not talking about the pain that they're going through. So we're seeing a big increase there. So I just want to share that. And our usual report was going to be last week but that was our conference, so we moved it here. So I forgot my data sheets for the quarter. So I will send those to you today.
Super.
And do you want this? Do you want this back to?
Yes. Okay. And I do have one other handout, Laura. If you'd help me, I better take one. This is our annual report for 2014. I'm very proud of it. We served for kids that had an open caseload or actually got somebody else.
Those seagulls are calling.
Here we go, George.
Hopefully it's, by the way, just so that the Board of Supervisors know, because of the concern with suicide and high risk behaviors in Story County, a group has been called together called the Crisis Line Planning Committee, and they just had their second meeting yesterday. We are now part of that group. Laura, if you'd hand this out to the board. And it's everyone who provides mental health counseling in Story County, and we are missing a crisis line. Now, at YSS, we have a helpline for youth. We've had it for 40 years, the same phone number, but that is for youth. We don't want adults calling, and that is answered 24/7 by a live person. We also have that number is 233-2330, youth only. So this would be a crisis line for all of Story County. Deb is part of this working group. I know eventually they'll be coming to the funders for support. I want you to know I really support this idea. We really need to have more locally based crisis line. We have the national crisis lines, but we need something here in Story County for people to call and to get help. So I wanted you to know that we're working on that, hoping as a collaborative effort to come to the funders and ask for some assistance in getting that started. Well, I'll just finish up with our annual report, just leafing through it. On page 4, you will see our new vision statement and also our breakthrough ideas through 2018. I mentioned earlier that we have several campaigns that will be coming up. The first one will be to build a new shelter. If you look through it, all of our services are described, and everything here for the first couple of pages are all about direct service programs, therapy, but that 5,600 does not include any of our prevention, kids club, after school, mentoring programs. Alone over the years, we've had over 20,000 people attend the Risky Business Conference. So all of that is in here, and I thank you for your support the last quarter and the last year, and want to leave you with that annual report. Thank you.
Very good.
George, thank you.
Thank you, George.
Last handout that I gave you, May 17th through the 23rd is National Prevention Week. So there is a sign that says, I choose. So that is for you guys. If you're interested, you can take a picture of yourself with your statement of, I choose to be tobacco-free for this reason, or I choose to not use substances for this reason, and then post it to social media to kind of create awareness about National Prevention Week.
Outstanding. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Good.
No departmental reports, no other reports. Public forum number 2. This is an opportunity for members of the public to comment on items not on today's agenda. We may not take any action due to the Iowa Open Meetings Law, but we may do so in the future. Is there anybody who wishes to address the board? Seeing no one moving to the microphone, liaison assignments and committee meeting updates. Paul.
Pass.
Wayne.
No liaison assignment. Just quickly, the Story County Conservation Board met last evening that I attended. A couple things of note. One of the things is Lucas Philmeyer was sworn in as a new peace officer for Story County, well received, and he's already been on board for the past year doing some things, but he finally graduated and completed the certification requirement to be a peace officer. Also, we considered the final plans and approved soliciting bids for Hickory Grove Watershed, something that's been in the work for a number of years. This will actually come back on June 2nd. And then it will be presented to the Board of Supervisors for our consideration. And hopefully on June 9th, they hope to be able to award the bids if everything factors in after looking at it. And then there was an agreement between easement from the Robert Jameson for a conservation easement. That's something that's been in the work for a number of years, and that's going to be kept in perpetuity, which will be a very important measure for us as well. And then there was just the review of the rules and regulations, the other report, just that you're aware, there's still ongoing discussions with the Research Park. We're still trying to work out some final logistics on some of the proposed changes. They wanted to add a new building. They needed over 250 some odd additional parking spaces, which means that there has to be some trade-off of some of the land that would be part of the area that Story County Conservation would be maintaining. So Mike is pleased with the progress that's going on so far, but there are other entities that need to be a part of the final decision-making before they can move forward. So that's why there's been no action on the Research Park at this time. So with that, that'll be all. I will be out of the office the next couple of days, attending the National League of Cities Iowa Municipal Workers Comp Board of Trustees meeting in Savannah, Georgia. So hopefully the weather is going to be nice, and I will have a little time down there to see some of the sites, but I will be in meetings Thursday, Friday, and half a day on Saturday.
We'll travel safely. Good. Announcements, Paul.
Just something for you two gentlemen to think about. It'll come to us here at some point for some action. The green space across the street where the old brick house stood that was torn down. Okay. There's some interest in turning that into a community garden. Initially, it was thought maybe employees could have a garden spot, and then further conversation said as just opposed to employees, open it up for community gardens. I have some questions and concerns about that, and it'll probably come to us here in the near future as a consideration item. So just gives that some thought and see what you come up with on that.
Yeah, my initial concern, Paul, would be I don't want to add maintenance, complex maintenance to our facility staff.
Correct.
But I don't know if this has been referred to EAC. I would have real interest in hearing what they have to say about it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Wayne, any other announcements other than Savannah?
Yeah.
Take a motion to adjourn.
So move.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. We're adjourned. Thank you, everybody.